Once more unto the breach, dear friends.
Else fill the wall up with our English dead.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and welcome back to another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach. And last hour was quite exciting for lots of technical reasons. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and in a moment we will get to things economic. But I wanted to recognize a reference that one of our faithful listeners with lots of patience on a Saturday morning to sit and wait for two bearded guys with bald heads to begin talking again. I made the statement waiting with bated breath, and he said better than waiting for Godot in his email, and then wanted to make sure that I got the reference. Waiting for Godot is a fantastic play that I've seen live while I was in Scotland. I also saw a movie back at the beginning of the 21st century, but then in looking it up to see who was in that movie, I find that there's a new one that just came out in 2021 that I have to check out. I'm going to watch it. Waiting for Godot is an amazing play and film. I would recommend if you're still listening to us after the technical difficulties that we've just been through, you have the sense of humor that is required to watch that film.
That is a very appropriate description, Waiting for Godot, because there's two guys having a conversation and the person they ultimately want to talk to isn't able to listen because he isn't there. So during that period of time, we were off the air. Jake and I were having a nice conversation.
Oh yeah.
And while waiting for KTEM.
Yes.
But that was interesting.
So thank you all for your patience and you may not all be doctors. So if you have patience, you may be practicing without a license. Just giving you some warnings. My mom told me to have patience my whole life. And then I found out I could go to jail for that. So no more patience for me.
Got it.
Yeah. Another bad pun. For those of you that wish to groan. Okay, we've got a whole bunch more stuff to talk about. What we said at the end of last hour, let me finish that off. We were talking about the New York Stock Exchange accidentally in a test for disaster recovery, accidentally starting a whole bunch of stock prices at the wrong numbers. They used the wrong backups, and the backups were from a time when the stock prices were lower. And you can actually probably forensically figure out which day they were using as their backup if you just look back at what trades were busted at what price and how it started and all that good stuff. But to me, it's kind of irrelevant. They made a big mistake. And a little over 4,000 trades occurred on these securities that they listed at the wrong price because of weirdness. So they busted the trade. And the question we had was, what does it mean when you bust a trade? That term is used throughout the trading of securities world, and it means different things at different scales. So at the New York Stock Exchange, when they bust a trade, they're doing it because their obligation is to protect harm from the sellers and prevent fraud to the buyers. If that makes sense. Their job is to make sure people don't cheat and buy from someone at the wrong price and that the person selling isn't lying about what they're selling. Their job is to keep the marketplace running smoothly. So when they bust a trade, they do take the liability for it. There may be lawsuits. Somebody might sue them for making them not be able to buy at the price that was advertised for that day. It probably won't go anywhere, but it will cost some money to defend. When they bust the trade, it's as if the trade didn't occur at the exchange level. There's a really good example of this on September 11th of 2001. The New York Stock Exchange was open for a good long period of time before the attack. It was closed for several weeks after the attack because they had to set up a new location and bring up all the backups and so on. This is what they were testing this last time around. All the trades that occurred on the morning of September 11th didn't happen. People bought things and people sold things. They were reversed. All of those trades were null. That's a busted trade. Some people may have, and you can put quotes around this, lost money on it, and that they sold at a price that they couldn't get when they went to resell it again at another time, particularly right after the attack when the markets opened up. There was a bit of a, more than a bit of a drop. So they were upset. But the reality is the marketplace has the obligation to remove trades that may have been done erroneously or in ways that would harm or damage either the buyer or the seller. So at a lower level, when you're a firm trading on the exchange, let's say somebody's got big fingers and they hit the zero button too many times when they were saying the number of shares or the number of dollars to buy or sell. You call up, you say, hey, I need to sell 10,000 shares of Microsoft, and they sell 100,000 shares of Microsoft. Will they have to bust that trade? They go, oh, we sold too many. Usually they can bust it quickly enough that they can claw it back and they can take it out of reserves of a market maker or something. But sometimes they can't. Sometimes they just have to, if they sold the stock, the firm has to buy that stock back. If the price just went up, they've got to buy at a loss and give it to that client. If the price goes down, they can buy it at a lower price. So what happens to the gain they just made? They bought it at a lower price. They accepted the money from the client at a higher price. Where does that money go? Well, there's a couple of things that have to happen there. It depends on the firm, but the vast majority of firms are not allowed to touch that money like it's profit. They have to keep it in a segregated error account. And this is part of the concept that people talk about when they're talking about like a locksmith has to be bonded because they have the key to your house. So they have to buy or have monetary reserves for the damages if somebody breaks into their shop or if one of their employees breaks into your house. If they've got a bunch of keys with your address labels on them and someone breaks in and takes their keys, they're liable for the bonding amount. It's like liability insurance for all kinds of things. So at the firm level, not at the exchange level, the trading company has to eat the loss, but they also don't get to keep the gains. I mean, they can keep the gains to use against some busted trade loss in the future. So it's weird, and most people don't understand how often mistakes still happen in trading. It's very strange. I mean, people know it when they make the mistake themselves, when they hit buy and sell instead of sell on their option trade. I've had people tell me it made them want to throw up and they just didn't. I mean, these are people that trade in their own accounts on a day-to-day basis and they hit the wrong button and it cost them thousands of dollars because they clicked the button at the wrong time or the wrong button. That happens in the professional world too. And there's lots of, you can look up when have big traders, there's the whale trade errors where there's way too many zeros on the end of it. It's caused big market moves. And I think I've probably answered that question. You look pregnant with more subjects. So please.
I want to change the subject. There's a couple of things that I think are important to get out there. There's a lot of stuff going on in the economy that I'd love to talk to at length, but now let's talk about something practical for a minute. I read several reports that there's a significant increase in non-exchange traded funds.
Wait a minute.
An ETF.
That would be an ETF.
An ETF, an exchange traded fund. We're certainly cautious about those to begin with. We prefer regular mutual funds. The difference, there's a lot of differences, but one of the primary differences between an exchange traded fund and a regular mutual fund is a regular mutual fund, if you go to sell or buy, it's whatever the price is of the underlying securities in the fund at the end of the day. And it's
plus or minus any during commissions that are being paid.
Right. But that's the underlying NAV of the fund.
Net asset value.
Is so you have a predictability and a stability and a certainty about something that's happening there. Now, exchange-traded funds...
Wait, and that has to do with the end of the day.
Right. Okay. At the exchange-traded funds are traded during the day. You sell one, someone buys one, theoretically, on, for example, the New York Stock Exchange, if that's where it's listed. What we're seeing is a lot of, it approached the majority of funds at one point recently, exchange-traded funds that are being traded off the exchange. Now, here's the problem with that.
There's only one? I can start down dozens.
There's a whole host of problems, but not the least of which is it is non-transparent. You don't know that you got the best price. And somebody, there's a spread between the buy and the sell on those. That's where the broker that does the buying and the selling makes money. And you don't know what it was. It is completely, in many cases, non-transparent. So one of the things, and I realize this takes a degree of sophistication if you're going to buy an ETF, to know where it's being bought, and when you go to sell it, where it's going to be sold.
Let me give an example. I'll give a couple of examples, but I'll just give one. Robinhood doesn't trade on the exchange. Robinhood is a firm that trades stocks, but they don't have a seat on the exchange. They have to go to someone else to trade their stocks. Right now, they're going to Citadel, which is a hedge fund. And Citadel is buying and selling for them. And sometimes they're holding, as a market maker, a bunch of stuff. They might own a bunch of ETF. And if you're in Robinhood and you go to buy ETF, you may not be buying it on the exchange. You might be buying it directly from Citadel. And you don't know what the spread on that was.
And this is a crucial point. Now, there have not been any widespread accusations of wrongdoing, although there have been some smells that smelled like wrongdoing.
The SEC has fined hundreds of millions of dollars to Robinhood, who did not admit wrongdoing, but still paid hundreds of millions of dollars.
Here's my point. Robinhood has a fundamental conflict of interest if you are trading an ETF. Not Robinhood, but Citadel, for example, has a fundamental conflict of interest because they may be on the other side of that trade.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of protections. We're talking about busted trades. There's a lot of protections on the New York Stock Exchange or even on the NASDAQ exchange or the American Stock Exchange. There are protections within the rules of the exchange so that you get treated fairly and are made whole if somebody screws up. That is not necessarily true elsewhere. Now, that's a fair warning. And I got another one.
Yeah.
Inside 401ks and other similar tax-deferred retirement plans, there's something new due to some changes in rules from the Congress's acts and the Labor Department.
And I'm going to have to say, by new, he means within the last decade because
No, very new.
But go ahead.
I'm talking about they're going to be allowed. And they are allowed now, and they're doing it, to put fixed annuities inside a 401k.
Yeah.
Now,
that is very new.
Let me explain what's wrong with that. When you get done at your company with your 401k and you want to go about your life somewhere else, you have the right to do what's called a rollover. You move it to an individual retirement account. What you do with it in the individual retirement account is your business. It is your right to do whatever you want to do with it. It is your responsibility as an individual to figure out what's going on or to hire somebody or pay somebody in some way to assist you. I won't go into all the nuances of that, and there are a lot. If you put your money into a fixed annuity in your 401k, and people apparently, there's some indication that people want to do this, and you decide that let's use an example. Let's say you have $1 million in your 401k and you're ready to retire and you say, okay, I want a reasonable rate of return from this, which has been shown historically and by a lot of academic studies to be around 4% plus inflation each year. Okay, you with me now? 4% plus inflation. That means there's no hard law that says this is going to work. It's just many studies have indicated this is reasonable. So you're now taking out $40,000 a year. And let's just say we have 2% inflation each year. You can theoretically, and this is the academic studies in history again, not the future, take your 4% and raise it by whatever inflation is each year. And there right now aren't any time periods where if you started doing that at the worst possible time, you would run out of money if you have a well-balanced portfolio. And I won't define what a real well-balanced portfolio is. It gets a little complex here. But let me just leave it at that. What would happen if you decided to use a fixed annuity when you retired rather than rolling over your IRA in rolling it over into an IRA and determining what you want to do with, let's say, buying a diversified set of investments or something. Well, in many cases, the annuity company will promise you more than 4%. So if you say you go to, let's say you're looking at rolling it over and you go to an investment advisor or a broker or something, and they think, they say a 4% withdrawal is reasonable, let's take 4%. And you check with the fixed annuity company that is now sponsored inside of your 401k, and they say, we'll give you 5.5%. We'll give you 5%. We'll give you 5.5%. Well, instantly your thought is, whoa, 5.5% is better than 4%, so let's go. Here's the problem. Whatever dollar amount you're getting when you retire is going to stay the same for the rest of your life. Let me say that again. Whatever dollar, now this is the normal fixed annuity. There may be bells and whistles that come along, but this is the key. So you get 5.5% instead of 4%. The problem is there's no adjustments for inflation. That's number one problem. You say, well, inflation's been low. And that was the argument when they put them in, inflation's so low, it doesn't make any difference. Oh, yes, it does make a difference. I have lived through high inflation and watched what happened to people in the Texas teachers retirement system who had a fixed number of dollars coming in and go back to work because that fixed number of dollars didn't buy a lot. And it's liable to, it just got through happening, folks. Admittedly, the annuities weren't in there last year, but let's say a year or two ago, you retired and your 401k had a fixed annuity and you put it in there. You're now getting, and you put it into a fixed annuity as you retired rather than putting it into an individual retirement account and managing it or having someone manage it. You would now be getting about 13% less in buying power than when you retired 2 years ago. Now let's go on.
That's a fair warning too.
The other problem is when you put it into that fixed annuity, it's the XYZ insurance company and they guarantee your income. Sure, it's guaranteed income. What happens if the XYZ or whatever insurance company becomes insolvent? Which happens, folks. What happens to your money? You won't find a good answer to that one. Well, there's a state guarantee fund. Well, the problem with the state guarantee fund is they're like the state guarantee funds that back banks when I first started 40 years ago. The problem with the state guarantee funds backing state banks is sometimes when they would go under, the state guarantee fund would run out of money and you wouldn't get all your money back. And I have been at this a long time. I've been at this 40 years now. And when I first started off, I was routinely seeing people in the 1980s who'd had their retirements in a fixed annuity with an insurance company because their pension had rolled over had converted into a fixed annuity purchased by their company that they worked for. And the company went under. And in many cases, these people got back like 30 cents on the dollar. Sometimes they didn't get their money back for 10 or 15 years. But when they finally got it, it was 30 cents on the dollar or 40 cents on the dollar. Do I know for a fact that's going to happen again? No, but it has happened. And despite the fact we had a horrific collapse of insurance companies 40 years ago, and why did we have the lobbyists from the state insurance boards and from the insurance companies prevented the federal government from forming an agency like the FDIC or the SIPC for stocks or the company? There is a pension benefit guarantee fund. It's like the SIPC and the FDIC.
But not at all, really.
But there is no agency of the United States government or formed by the United States government that backs fixed annuities. So you are an unsecured creditor of the fixed annuity company. And that is a big risk.
I'm going to jump in here and say some important things. You should research FDIC and SIPC and the Pension Guarantee Trust Company.
Pension Benefits Guarantee
Pension,
Fund.
Yes, the Pension Benefit Guarantees Fund. Research them to see what their coverage is. They're not similar to each other, except that they are entities there to help in the event of loss. They right. cover very, very, very different things. So just because we're mentioning them in the same sentence, don't feel like they're overly related to each other. They're different kinds of insurance, and they don't have a whole lot of relationship to each other, except they're there to help in the event of malfeasance type losses.
If the bottom line to all those companies is the same thing, if the company, the person or the company that is holding your money goes under, there is some degree of federal backing to give you money back.
Yeah. We can't go into enough detail on here on the air without boring the snot out of everybody doing it. What we need to make sure you understand, when we talk about those aspects of a marketplace, whether it's a bank or the stock exchange or so on, it's really important to thoroughly understand that coverage. And it's not easy. FDIC has all kinds of weird stuff about how your account's registered, and the SIPC is only covering you under completely different circumstances.
Yes, and I got that. And the important, there's a secondary important element to that, though. The FDIC examines banks. The SIPC examines broker-dealers. The PBGIC, Pension Benefit Income Corporation, examines pension funds, and they have to meet certain regulatory requirements or they can't function. There is no federal agency that examines insurance companies. It's strictly the states. And if you don't live in the state where that insurance company is domiciled, you may not have any coverage at all. No. Last but not least, in most states, let me throw one other thing in there. Okay, I know you may want to back some of the things.
This is not enough information to be really balanced, and we can't give you enough information on it. So you really need to thoroughly look into it.
Here, I want to say one thing that I can say unequivocally. I have examined the state guarantee funds of many states. They're what they say and what they say they will cover. What they don't cover is what are called group annuities. Most pension annuities that are purchased by a company to fund their pensions when people retire are group annuities, and they're not even covered by the state guarantee funds in every case I've ever seen. So just, I want you to be very cautious. And here's the bottom line to it. We have talked in the past about non-traded real estate investment trusts, non-traded securities, non-traded items. When you say this is alternates, alts, and non-traded this and non-traded that,
and they hold their value when everything else is moving, they don't necessarily. They just look like they do because nobody's buying or selling it.
And the underlying value of your fixed annuity that you purchase from a insurance company is based on the value of the portfolio of stocks and bonds or real estate or forests or whatever held by that insurance company. You just don't see the fluctuation. And we've been following a nice little cycle of things that nobody thought would ever happen again happening. And it's going to happen. I am confident, but not certain, that at some point, as interest rates rise, because that's what triggered the fall, the collapse of insurance companies in the 1980s, rising interest rates, because these insurance companies hold large bond portfolios. Bond portfolio values fall as interest rates rise. As interest rates rise, people who have surrenderable annuities look at the interest rate, look at the interest rate being paid in their guaranteed fixed position, their guaranteed position at a insurance company, and they say, "Whoa, I can get more in a money market fund than I was getting at the insurance company." And they surrender, in other words, they liquidate and they go away. And when they do that, the insurance company has to sell bonds at a loss to cover that liquidation, and that's how they got in trouble. I don't see anything out there that's preventing that from happening right now. Interest rates are rising again for the first time in 40 years. And I think that would not be surprised in the next several years to start seeing annuity insurance companies get into financial trouble. We'll have to see. There's no certainty about anything. Anytime that you get into something that is not traded, is not visible, is not transparent, you are to avoid market risk, you are taking another risk, and you really need to know what risk you're taking before you get into it.
As a parallel to that, just as an easy way of looking at this, if you've ever been around a small business owner versus someone working at a corporation, small business owner, people would say, well, that's scarier. You don't know what you're going to get paid month to month. You don't even know if people are going to do business with you next month. So as a small business owner, that seems like you're taking a lot of risk. The thing is that, as we've seen recently with all the big tech layoffs, a corporation might not get paid for something for a few months too, and they respond to that by laying people off. You get this kind of feeling like you've got extra stability because you're with a big corporation and you're not taking as much risk. But the reality is that you just don't see the risk. It doesn't necessarily mean the corporation's bad. so long as you research the corporation. And what we're saying is the same when it comes to anything involving any kind of guarantee or any kind of hidden methodology that doesn't expose you to the risk that you're actually being exposed to. You don't know about it.
It exposes you to the risk. It just doesn't inform you of the risk that you're being exposed to.
Because somebody else has some degree of insurance on it or whatever. But I would, you know, there's other times in history, not that long ago, that people got caught up in that same concept of you've got this insurance-backed, collateral-backed bond, a mortgage backed by a house that you could foreclose on. It's got mortgage insurance on it given by big rating agencies. It's been told it's the highest credit rating available, but when you dug down into the thing, you found a bunch of really bad stuff with a huge amount of insurance. And I would recommend that you look back at the global financial crisis, the Great Recession. It was an insurance-based issue. AIG was the first company that really ran into problems after a series of Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers. They were all insurance-based applications where they were buying insurance on things and using the insurance to say the credit rating is better, and then mixing it up and adding some more bad stuff and just adding more insurance on top of it. You have to dig down into what you're buying. Anytime somebody says this is high credit and high interest, it doesn't make sense. When somebody says this is going to give you stability across the marketplace that you don't see stability in regularly, it doesn't make sense. Understand what that stability is coming from and what the cost is, what the risks are.
And there's a parallel here. There's a big parallel that I see very, very clearly because I've been at this so long. And that is in the late 70s, going into the early 80s, as interest rates started to rise, and they rose suddenly and dramatically in a short period of time. And if you've been following the interest rate rises that have gone on in 2022, you
Interest rates are up? When did that happen?
Yeah, 98%.
How did that happen?
You go back 40 years, and it happened then, too.
Not quite as fast.
Right as that occurred, there was a rush of non-traded, what we would today call alts, being sold. People were being sold investments that were stable and sure things and guarantees in real estate, in oil and gas, in whatever was out there, that were not traded on the market, not traded on the stock market. And people were proud of the fact they were not traded on the stock market. Why? Because we had just come out of the 1980-82 recessions where the market dropped a lot in a relatively short period of time. And people were scared of the market. They were retiring and they bought things that didn't trade. They didn't see the fluctuations in value day to day or month to month or year to year. And they were just gobbling those things up. And over the years, I have witnessed a lot of people who are very, very unhappy that they did that because it took them many years to get any money back. Some of them got no money back at all. And when they finally got money back, it was only a minority percentage of what they initially invested. We're going back into that. I see a lot about alternatives. I notice alternative investments, they're called now. And I am getting advertisements on a regular basis that try to talk us into suggesting to our clients to buy into these, quote, alts. There's a great deal of danger there, folks. When you get away from a regular exchange, which is, and we talk about busted trades and so on, a regulated exchange. And when you get away from transparency, you get away from liquidity. People can make a lot of promises about what's going on in there, and you won't have any way of figuring out whether it's really happening until it blows up.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a really, really, really easy to follow example of that in the crypto world, where you have these, our whatever, fill in the blank, is safe, it will keep up with inflation, it's better than the dollar, it's all the things. And the country's going, oh, we're going to make that our currency. Well, that's a bad decision. It didn't work very well. Why? Because it's not a regulated exchange. You can't know who's buying from whom. And that's we've talked about this over the last 5 years repeatedly. On the big crypto exchanges, a lot of the trading volume, when how many things are being bought and sold in a given day, are what's called wash sales, which are illegal in a regulated exchange, where you would buy from yourself, essentially. Buy from yourself to show that there's trading occurring, and even buy from yourself for more money than it's worth. So if you have money over in one account and you buy from another account that, and it looks like you just made a trade and caused the market to go up. Well, guess what? In a regulated exchange, that's called market manipulation, and you can go to jail. It is the majority of trades that took place in many of the major crypto exchanges in 2022. The majority of trades were illegal trades in another exchange, not illegal in the crypto world, according to them. Well, the SEC is coming in and saying, I don't care if this isn't a security until you start exchanging it like this. As soon as it's backed by a third party that is incorporating some value into it, including the person you're buying it from, it becomes a security. And even if it were a piece of dirt that you're hyping up and changing the price of, that's still illegal. You can't commit fraud and fake trades to cause the price to change when it really didn't, so that you can sell it to someone else. And all that is going to come home to roost. And what we're saying is, anytime you get away from the regulated exchange, it doesn't matter if it's crypto or alts or
real estate.
Or real estate. You each real estate trade doesn't have to follow the same exchange rules as a security. They're not necessarily even a federally regulated thing. It's in a given state somewhere. You wanted to add to this.
I want to add that also occurs not just in crypto. It commonly occurs in real estate investment trusts and real estate investments.
Yeah.
The properties are being purchased at a certain price, and they'll advertise that, and they're being sold at a higher price in the existing investments, and they're talking about how much profit they're making.
Sometimes they're being bought by the same company that owns that trust in another trust.
I actually dug into it, and that's exactly what was happening. The company that's busy setting up this thing they want to sell to you is actually doing the buying and selling themselves to other elements of the same entity, making it look like they're turning a big profit when in fact they're not turning any profit at all. They're turning a loss.
And that, under generally accepted accounting practices, in a security is not correct. It is absolutely in violation of GAAP. This is what occurred at Enron, and the generally accepted accounting practices changed because nobody thought you would make a loan to a subsidiary company, charge it a high interest rate, and call that profit, because it's not profit. You're charging interest to yourself. Even the government doesn't call it profit when it's charging itself interest, because it doesn't actually charge itself the interest that it says it's charging. How's that for a mouthful? So
it's going on. The bottom line to it again, as soon as you get away from something that's transparent, that is traded on a regular regulated exchange or is regulated clearly under federal law, you are taking a huge risk. And the worst thing about that risk is you have no clue what it is.
Now, at this point, some of the listeners out there are likely saying, too little, too late. Why didn't you warn us about this in 2021 or 2020? I would recommend that you go back and listen to the podcast or the radio, because we were talking about it at the time, at the height of the mania. We were saying, this is the height of a mania. It has all the bookmarks that say this part right here is about to lead to this chapter, and we've read that chapter before, and you don't want to be in the drama. Let's get away and be a spectator. Unfortunately, it's not a drama unless there are people participating. Sadly.
And I really have a strong suspicion there's going to be some horror stories, certainly within the next decade, about people who lost a lot of money someplace where they thought they were completely safe.
Right.
So
yeah, I think you can say that about in every single decade. You can say there's going to be a lot of horror stories about people losing money in places they thought they were safe. Do your due diligence. If someone is proclaiming a high rate of return and safety in the same sentence, that's your first red flag, because safety doesn't come with high returns. It doesn't. That's not how you stay safe. Anybody that puts the two together, it doesn't matter what they're talking about. It's a red flag. Be careful. And it should be all you need to stop and say no more of that.
And it's time for commercials.
We do. We have to play some commercials. Let's give the email addresses real quick. If you'd like to add to our conversation or subtract our conversation from the conversation with your input, please email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. That's Tango, Papa, Whiskey, Charlie, or the personal wealth coach if you just like to type .com. And we'll be back on the other side of these very important announcements. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and
Jeff McClure.
And by starring, I mean sometimes when we get knocked in the head, we see stars.
Startling.
Startling, yes. Startled, even. Maybe startled.
I'd like to say something about economics again in just a minute as we close out our last 15 minutes.
On this program, talk about, this is absurd. Go ahead.
Yeah. The gross domestic product of the United States, first estimate from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, grew at a 2.9% annualized rate in the fourth quarter. Now, why is it significant? Well, first off, 2.9% is almost precisely what the consensus of economists agree is the maximum sustainable rate of the United States economy. In other words, folks, it just don't get no better than this. Now, what else is significant about that?
Wait a minute. That was a double negative. Or do you have a hidden meaning in there?
That it gets, I have a hidden. It gets better than something this? Like it just don't get no better than this. The other thing is, with that fourth quarter GDP estimate that the Bureau of Economic Analysis came out with, they now can tell us their best guess at the point what the GDP for the whole year of 2022 was, which is 2.1%, which is a lot less than the 5.9% we had in the previous year. The 5.9% in the previous year was recovering from 2020, so we were going like gangbusters to catch up. 2.1% for the year, but 2.9% for the last quarter. What does that say? That means the last quarter of the year, the gross domestic product of the United States was accelerating. Think about that just a minute. We don't see that normally going into a recession. As a matter of fact, I've never seen it going into a recession. There's a lot of evidence out there that we're not seeing a recession coming down the line. That doesn't mean we're not going to have one, because sometimes you don't get a lot of advance warning. But we are definitely in a very unusual economic condition right now, where the typical tea leaves that are red indicating a recession may not be accurate, because we literally have not been through this set of economic circumstances for 100 years. And we didn't keep a lot of good records back then. So there's a lot of people with a lot of opinions, but more and more and more what we're seeing is that things are stabilizing and continuing to grow and maybe even accelerating at the real growth rate down at the bottom. Let me give you an example. You're seeing a lot of layoffs from big tech companies, big numbers. What you're not seeing, though, is the unemployment rate go up or the unemployment claims go up. We have something close to record low unemployment claims while hundreds of thousands of people are getting laid off from big tech companies. Why is that? Because small companies are hiring them as fast as they're getting laid off. Small companies have lower profit margins, so they're not raising their wages, which means this is not going to negatively affect inflation. Jake.
All right. So next thing up, metal prices are going up. Copper, mm-hmm. zinc, tin. What is, I mean, big. Tin is up 80% since October. Tin, not the number, the metal. So that metal has jumped up 80%. Why? What's going on here? Why is copper up more than 20%? Why is zinc up more than 20%? Because China is reopening its manufacturing. What does that mean? Other prices are going to start falling again. A big chunk of the reason that there's some really big pieces to this puzzle. Really big. There's a lot of pieces to the puzzle, but the biggest pieces are there's a war going on in Ukraine that caused a big chunk of our prices to go up. And a not quite as large, but still very large chunk of the puzzle is China's full shutdown rolling all over the country. Unforecastable, huge chunk of the manufacturing capability just goes offline. And that's caused a lot of our other shortfalls to get fixed by going to other sources. Well, now we've been busy finding other sources for stuff at higher prices sometimes, and the competition is about to start getting fierce for those other sources. China's coming back online. When they do that, the prices for all the things that we're buying right now are likely to drop. Quality might drop as well. So keep that in mind. If we're going to be coming from a purely price standpoint for a short while as prices start dropping and you go, whoa, I can buy this at this price again. Then you might get it and find out that the quality is really poor. So then this is a normal return out of recession. Historically, when we look at prices that occur like this, this is a normal coming out of a recession type situation for these numbers. The graphing of this looks like recovery from recession, but China claims to have not been in recession. So you can either look at the evidence or the statement. I tend to look at the evidence. China's coming out of a recession. They're not out of it yet, but they're turning on all their machines and they're hiring back a huge amount of people that were unemployed. Their 16 to 26-year-old male demographic had unemployment above 26% for a big chunk of the last year. That sure looks like a recession to me.
Copper is a really good predictor of longer-term economic trends.
Correct.
Copper fell 25%, bottomed in October when the market bottomed, and is since up about 12% since then. It's been rising since October.
If you look at the base metal, and we're looking at Bloomberg as a source there, it's up 80%. So there's different contracts that are up at different times. You may be talking about spot and we may be talking about futures. So this is one of those things. It's up dramatically. Sorry, copper's up 25%. I'm sorry, the base metal. Zinc's up the 80%.
The copper, and it's up 4% so far this year, copper is.
Right.
Now, what is that a guarantee where you've got a booming economy coming? No, but it is a strong indication. And what we see historically, And this is why it's a good one. Almost everything you build has to have copper. People don't wait until they build it to buy the copper.
Yeah.
They say, I've got a contract to build this 6 months from now. I need to start buying copper. And that is a powerful leading economic indicator. And it has risen 4% so far this month, which is one of the reasons the market is going up, because people are looking ahead and saying, whoa, these people who know what they're going to be doing and get paid for 6 months from now are saying, we need more copper, which means they have contracts already in place that they're going to be doing more stuff, building more airplanes and cars and houses around the world.
Now,
so
the end result of
strong
this,
indicators there.
Right. The end result of this, China opening back up. We see this as good news, period, across the board, but it's also likely to put some nails in the coffin of China as the place to go for manufacturing. because as they're coming back online, their quality has already clearly been dropping. And this is a universal thing across the board. It has a lot to do with having the safety and quality control people ejected from the country. It's amazing that safety has dropped and quality has dropped after that occurred. Why do I say ejected from the company or from the country? The vast majority of the quality control and safety officers for the manufacturing in China come from Western countries. They were there because their products were being sold somewhere. So as they left, a lot of the, and we've talked about this too, a lot of copycats came out there and started stealing intellectual property on things like connectors for phones and for your cell phone to a headset or to dozens and hundreds of things. Quality just dropped through the floor. And as these things come back online, much of the industry is moving to other locations. So the remains of the manufacturing facilities that were semi-abandoned in many cases by Western countries are still producing something that looks very much like what was produced there before, basically keeping the intellectual property, even though it doesn't belong to them, and producing it as an off-brand type thing. So why do I say this is another set of nails in the coffin? Nobody's going to want to take new ideas to China to make their stuff if they know that China is immediately going to go into competition with them for the very thing that they're going to China to make. This is just, it's a universal truth in business. And this is a trend we should expect to go forward. Prices are going to drop. You're going to start worrying more about quality than prices. Right now, that's less important. Prices are high. Let's find lower prices. As the prices drop, then it's going to be a competition for quality, and you're only going to figure out what's a fair price for what you really want. And this is a normal part of a cycle, but we haven't been in this part of the cycle for about 20 years. So for many people, this is many people that are voting age and above, almost drinking age, this is the absolute first time they've experienced a drop in quality in products that they've used. Most people are used to things getting better and going back and buying the same thing that they got before because it lasted so long, and they're being surprised when the thing falls apart almost immediately. What's going on here? So just to be aware of that as a consumer trend. And we're about out of time for this week. We were truncated, which means that our noses got much longer and we could pick things up with them. No, it means we were shortened in the first hour by half an hour. So we're sad about that, but thank you, those of you that waited anyway. From the very depths of our being, from the very bottom of our feet, which is as low as you can get. I mean, that's much lower and deeper than the bottom of our heart. We thank you. And if you would like to talk to us off the air, we do give investment advice at a fiduciary level, custom investment and portfolio management, to people of generally higher net worth. You can contact us with voicemail during the weekends, real live people during the week, locally at
254-947-1111.
Or you can go to our toll-free 1-800-914-7526, 1-800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can sign up for our newsletter, read our newsletter, listen to podcasts or radio programs going back quite a ways. Contact us through the contact form or directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Thank you very much for listening. Until next week.